Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. In addition to it being 420 today, it's also Earth Week, and we have been talking a lot about renewable energies, carbon zero life, and the kind of innovations that might permit us to continue our lives sort of the way that we are living now without making huge, huge sacrifices in order to save the planet. Carbon energy, of course, is just a part of our way of life, and it's embedded in the processes that do everything from producing our food to the ways that we go about our work to the transportation that we rely on. Everything in American life really is about carbon. And as part of our Earth Week series, we want to look at some of these interesting technologies that could be a bigger part of our life to reduce our carbon footprint. In this segment, we're taking a look at different home, building, and city infrastructure that are both cool to look at and emit very little carbon. We've got Michael Eliason here to talk about all of this with us. Eliason is founder of Larch Lab, which is an architecture and urbanist studio and think tank in Seattle. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Stephen.
So you're a big fan of carbon neutral homes and buildings. How'd you get into that in the first place? And why are our buildings and our cities such an important space to experiment with this idea of carbon neutrality?
Yeah, when I was in college, I interned for an architecture firm in Freiburg, Germany for a year. The firm did a lot of really innovative work around low energy buildings, incorporating mass timber, things that we weren't really doing in the U.S. for another 10 or 15 years. Freiburg is the, quote, California of Germany. They get the most sun. There's a strong push for sustainability there. It's kind of the solar center of Europe. Really incredible city, pedestrian zones, almost no cars in the core. So it was really kind of this great foundation. You know, there's also eco districts. There's this really family-friendly eco district called Vauban, which has passive house buildings, which are ultra-low energy buildings, Baugruppen, urban co-housing, and it was really bike-friendly. I think the reason that it's so important that we focus on buildings and cities is it's a huge component of our carbon budget, right? So we want to live kind of low-carbon lifestyles, living in cities resource-efficiently, in low-energy buildings, you know, walking, biking, transit are really kind of the ways that the IPCC has indicated that we get there.
So I always want to ask this question when we talk about these kinds of technologies, and I think it's a limiting question in some ways. How realistic is it for someone like me, for instance, to even consider the possibility of living in a home that's carbon neutral? How accessible is that? And how do, I guess, we make it more accessible to more people?
That's a really interesting question. So I think that it's attainable, it's accessible. There are opportunities for subsidizing low energy homes in Europe. There's a really big push for retrofitting and building new social housing or alternative kind of non-market forms of housing like cooperatives, co-housing, rental syndicates. So I think that there are paths forward to it, but it's really, we need government support. We need regulations that sort of, you know, it's the carrot and the stick. So we need some mandates and we need some incentives and subsidies to really kind of push us in that direction.
So what are the benefits of living in a city that's more dense and greener and has more homes that are more tightly connected? That's one of the big sort of principles behind this idea of carbon neutrality or limited carbon. Why should we be pushing for that?
Well, I think the big one is there's a big opportunity to change the way that we live in cities. So historically, the last 100 years or so, it's kind of been a public health nightmare, right? Pollution, noise. And so when we think about like how our cities will change in response to climate action and global warming, there are opportunities to have, you know, prioritize active transit. So biking, walking. So you have a more healthy population in that regards. Your walking places, everything that you need should be closer to you. So you're not having to drive, you know, a couple of miles to go to the grocery store and drive a couple of miles to go to daycare and then, and, you know, drive to work. So the idea is that maybe it's a way of rethinking our cities and rethinking mobility so that, you know, you can do everything, you know, so you walk to the store, you walk to daycare or drop off your kids at school. So I think it's about kind of shortening those distances. It's also, I think, an opportunity for better public health outcomes with regards to, you know, lower air pollution. So that's asthma and heart disease get reduced, less noise pollution, which is associated with dementia. But I think there's also these solidarity components, right? Building up community, living with young and old, kind of reconnecting as a society in a way that the U.S. hasn't been so great at the last couple of decades.
And I think it's kind of important to note that you're not just talking about a technology or a series of technologies that make it possible for us to have a smaller carbon footprint. It is also, there is a social and sociocultural component to this that you're really emphasizing.
Yeah, I think that's definitely part of it. It's, you know, at Larch Lab, one of our focuses is on Baugruppen, which are self-developed urban co-housing. It's about people coming together, building the kinds of housing, the kind of life that they need to essentially live a low carbon life, to have support and solidarity. You know, so many family structures today are disparate and wildly different than they were 50 years ago. The nuclear family doesn't really exist in the same way, right? Think about how many different household formations there are. LGBTQ households, single parents, multi-generational. So I think it's really about kind of accommodating this diversity of lifestyles and household formation in really the way that we live.
I'm talking with Michael Eliason. He's the founder of Larch Lab, an architecture and urbanist studio and think tank. He wrote a piece in the Vault Substack titled "The Five Coolest Trends in Urbanism in Europe." We're talking about green infrastructure, really, in cities, the way that we live in cities like Detroit, where we've got huge carbon footprints right now, lots of single-family homes, many of them quite large. How would we rethink that in a way that would shrink that carbon footprint? What kinds of things could we do? We want to hear from you during this conversation as well. What do you make of our city's sprawling nature? Do you wish that we had more density, that we had restaurants and parks and homes closer together? Do you think it's possible to create a denser, greener city out of a place like Detroit? Do you think there are technologies that could help us lower the carbon footprint that we have? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the WDET Facebook page and put comments there, or go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation that way. Michael, you focus on mass timber buildings, essentially replacing concrete and steel with wooden beams. I wonder if you could spend a little time talking about what that looks like and why that matters in this movement.
Yeah, so one of the big pushes with how we move forward in constructing buildings is decarbonizing them. So reducing the amount of carbon emitted during the construction. And so mass timber offers this ability to use resource efficiency, a material that can sequester carbon, right? If we're using sustainably harvested wood and then replanting it, right, there's this concept that we could basically be net zero in terms of carbon. There's a little bit of fuzzy math that goes on with that, and there's a lot of people still trying to figure out how to actually quantify that. But I think there are a bunch of other aspects to mass timber buildings that are great. They go together fast. It's a super quiet and clean construction site. It's all prefabricated, so it goes together really tightly. It goes together really quickly. There's not a lot of waste generated on sites. So it's kind of higher quality. It's more durable. It's better thermally versus concrete or steel as well. So, you know, in terms of energy performance of the building after it's built, it's also kind of much more energy efficient. And then it's, you know, it's wood is great to look at, right? There's the biophilic components of looking at wood. And so I think it really offers kind of this rethink of how we've done construction the last, you know, century, effectively, of really moving forward. And, you know, they have mass timber buildings in the U.S. now that are skyscrapers, low rise, mid rise, you know, small detached houses, ADUs even. So it also encompasses kind of this broad range of potentialities in terms of how we build.
And again, the question, how accessible is this kind of building? How can we make this something that is more in use in more places?
Yeah, so the government incentives, I think, are a big one. There aren't a lot of manufacturers in the U.S., although that is changing pretty dramatically. There are more options in the EU. There are more subsidies in the EU for mass timber construction. And so it's really taken hold there a little bit sooner and quicker than we have here. But there's a lot of interest. Mass timber social housing is definitely a thing. So I think that, in time it will be attainable. It's really going to be a question of, how resource efficient can we be with it? So are we using it efficiently, or are we just putting big panels of wood together and maybe it's not so intelligent in the way that we're using it? And then, if it's sustainably harvested or not as well, because if we're not sustainably harvesting it, then we're just completely blowing our carbon savings.
Sure. Are there cities we should be looking at that are getting this right, or at least more right than other places?
Oh, this is an interesting question. So the city of Amsterdam has a wood requirement in their construction, and I think that cities could definitely move in that direction. There's no city in the U.S. that has a passive house mandate yet, and passive house is this low energy standard. Basically, the EU mandates all buildings be close to passive house effective, I think, 2020. Brussels had a really good approach to basically incentivizing developers and architects and the trades through incentives, financial incentives, subsidies, promotions, and actually training up people so that they would know how to build this. So there was this training the trades program as well. And they've really become a lighthouse in terms of sustainable buildings, low energy buildings. And they're now exporting that, technology and know-how to the U.S., China, all of these other places. And so, the IPCC indicated that weak energy codes were a huge risk for carbon lock-in. And so, I think that we'll start to see cities, hopefully in the U.S., if not mandating things like passive house, at least their own buildings, because cities, build and manage a lot of buildings, will be retrofitted and built to passive house standards with mass timber and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Are there impediments to America having more of these passive house kind of buildings and those that are similar? Like, what do we need to do to bring more of these projects home from a policy perspective?
Yeah, I think historically it's just been not a lot of people knew what it was, and there was difficulty in getting products. The manufacturing is the big one. We don't really mandate passive house, and so they're are no real window manufacturers in the U.S. that can make the high quality. It's kind of the Porsche of windows, right? These triple pane airtight windows. We have airtight membranes. We can import windows. There are some companies that make them. The real one is just the policy needs to kind of, it's the carrot and the stick again. We need mandates. Our buildings in the next couple of years should be hitting passive house consistently, but we also need, effective subsidies from the government as well.
Okay. Michael Eliason of LARCH, it was really great to have you here for this conversation about sustainable housing and buildings in cities. Thanks so much for joining us on Detroit Today.
Thanks for having me.
That's going to do it for us today. Come back tomorrow when we're going to be talking about the significance of wind energy and transmission lines in Michigan and beyond, continuing our look at new green infrastructure as part of Earth Week. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.